his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score! Jones. Watford for the win. Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back to another edition of Podcast on the Brink. I'm Greg Rosenstein, as always, joined by Matt Dollinger. What's going on, Matt?
Not much. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too. We got a big show. We got Terry Hutchins of the Indy Star. We have Justin Albers of Inside the Hall. Both are currently driving back from Iowa, from what I've been told, so this should be an interesting conversation. Hopefully they don't get into a car accident. We'll be talking a lot about the Iowa game yesterday where Indiana won 69-65, pretty close game. But first, Matt, how was your New Year's?
It was good, you know, boosted by the fact that the Hoosiers and Pacers won earlier in the day. So it was going to be tough to ruin the night, but it was good. It's, you know, noon right now and I'm up and at 'em. So I think overall that's a victory. How about you?
It's like you didn't go hard enough last night.
Well, you know, I knew the fact that I had to bring my A game for the podcast the next day. I had to hold back a little bit.
Probably should have considered that.
And in my old age, you know, it's just not the same.
True. Where'd you go?
We went a couple places around Atlanta, but we ended up at a friend's house for midnight. So no clubs or anything.
So you didn't pay like $150 like some of my idiotic friends?
I paid $150 at dinner and then I had to go somewhere else for midnight.
Yeah, see, I decided to just go to a house party because I wanted to save that money so I could buy Super Bowl tickets for the Redskins.
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's not go into that. I just wanted to give a shout-out to my boy, RG3. Let's go back and talk a little bit about Indiana's win yesterday. It was a close win. You know, maybe a little closer than people thought, but I think it's good to see, you know, them do what they did on the road like that. It actually seemed like a pretty hostile environment.
Yeah, those Big Ten road wins are always, you know, 50-50 coin flips, even when you're the best team in the Big Ten playing, you know, a worse team. Not that this was, but, you know, it's just so hard to win on the road in the Big Ten. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was, you know, one of IU's better wins of the year, and I was actually talking to Alex Bozich earlier, and he was arguing it is their best win of the year, you know, better than Georgetown, better than North Carolina, you know, because the fact that IU won a Big Ten game, and if they had lost it, it would have hurt them, you know, in the race for the title. So, you know, when you put it in that context, it really is a huge win. And just like I said earlier, any road win is a huge accomplishment in the conference. So, yeah, I think it was a great win. I don't think it was cheapened by the fact that it came by only 4 points.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And here's the other thing. I'm looking at the stat sheet right now. You're looking at the point column, 0 points for Jordan Hulls, 0 for 10, 0 for 4 on 3-point attempts. You're pulling out a Big Ten win without arguably your best scorer. So I don't know what necessarily happened to Jordan yesterday. He was getting some good looks, just wasn't hitting. I guess what's your overall take on how he did yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, 0 for 10 stands out. And, you know, I think you just have to chalk it up to being an off night for him because you've never seen him shoot like that before. And, you know, I think Iowa did a good job of putting pressure on him and everything, but I think it was just more of the shots not falling. Just one of those, you know, forgettable nights. The good thing is that he did have 6 assists and no turnovers. So, you know, he still was worth putting on the floor for 22 minutes and keeping in the game. It wasn't like he was killing IU. And, you know, Crean said after the game he wants him to keep shooting and everything, even when he's going through a slump like that. So, you know, I bet he bounces back against Penn State and he's just fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the good news is they did have Victor Oladipo, who I definitely thought was the best player in yesterday's game. He went 6 for 10 from the field, 10 rebounds, 14 points. I mean, you could say he's the MVP of this team right now. He's doing just about everything. And I think the biggest play of the game was his offensive rebound on Cody's air ball and the turnaround. He rebounded the ball, put it back in there with about a minute left, and that was kind of enough to push IU to the victory. So I think Victor had a huge game, and Cody led all scorers yesterday. His first half was a little slow, but I think, you know, the second half he really came out a lot more aggressive and kind of carried this team a little bit.
Yeah, a silent 19 points and 10 rebounds. You missed the game and you looked at the box score, you'd think he must have been dominating, but really was a quiet, great performance from him. But Oladipo, like you said, is the Energizer Bunny on the team. I mean, he's the guy that nobody wants to face on IU. Nobody wants to guard. And, you know, he just turns it up another level and plays at a higher gear than everyone else, especially when, you know, IU's slumping and really needs a basket. He brings the energy. And, you know, Kareen echoed those comments and said he was just the most important player after the game. And, you know, he's the guy that's, you know, improved the most the last couple of years. He's the one they turn to, you know, when they need a bucket now. And yeah, he's, you know, I think we all assumed that Zeller was going to be the face of this team before the year, but it's Oladipo. He's been amazing.
Agreed. There's a lot more we could talk about on this game. We could preview the next couple Big Ten games. Why don't we go and get Hutch on the show?
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. We are now joined by Terry Hutchins of the Indianapolis Star, who is so gracious to join us on New Year's Day. He's driving back from Iowa City right now, but for the sake of the podcast and listeners everywhere, he's pulled over to the side of the road, hopefully, you know, far enough off the highway to talk to us and to come through clear on the show. But Hutch, how you doing today?
Good. You know, actually, my employers at the Indianapolis Star will be happy to hear this as well, because it's actually in my contract that I'm not allowed to do interviews as I drive over.
Where are you
and
exactly?
Do the interviews that way. So, we're in beautiful Galesburg, Illinois, and it's bright, sunny skies, and it's a balmy 16 degrees.
Wow! And you're joined by Justin Albers in the car. How's he for a companion on the road? Pretty good navigator.
You know what, I'll tell you this about Justin Albers, and that's that I've had a lot of people ride with me over the course of the years, back and forth to all these Big Ten places, and, you know, he really doesn't say a whole awful lot, so it's great. You know, you guys know George Montgomery, who wears way too much cologne and pretty much intoxicates you as you drive. And
FUBU outfits.
You know, I've had a couple of others. I won't mention any names, but Jeff Rabjohns was one of them. And Albers is clearly the best.
I can't believe you brought up George Montgomery without bringing up his American flag shirt, which might be my favorite creation of all time.
You know what? I mean, people listening to this don't know him, and it's too bad because I could regale you with stories about him all day long. He's one of the most interesting, abnormal, unique individuals I've ever met.
The greatest thing I've ever seen was the fake George Twitter account. Do you remember that?
That was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I do. Yep. I mean, he was pretty fired up about that, and we all knew who the creator of it was, and then yep. George said he was going to sue him. He actually got an attorney and did all
wow.
this stuff. Oh, yeah, it was crazy.
We'll save that for the bonus George Montgomery podcast, which is coming after Big Ten season, I think. Hutch, you know, we want to get your take on the win in Iowa City last night. That's been a tough place for the Hoosiers to play the past couple of years. Were you impressed by the fact that they're able to pull out the victory?
Yeah, I really was. You know, and you know, going into that game, you know, I thought it was going to be a test that they needed to pass simply because they hadn't played a true road game to that point in the season. You know, first 13 games, they went to the Barclays Center and had the two games in an arena that felt like Assembly Hall East in terms of how many Indiana people were there. And then it was a great college basketball environment at Bankers Life Fieldhouse when Butler knocked them off in overtime. But, you know, Indiana really hadn't had that true road experience. And you wondered how guys like Yogi Ferrell and Jeremy Hallwell and people like that who hadn't really been in that situation would handle it. But I really wasn't sure if Iowa City on New Year's Eve was really going to give you that feel, because – you know, I can't remember the last time it was full for an IU Iowa game, and then the fact that the students are out and all of that. But you know, I think what we found out yesterday in Iowa City is that, when the temperatures are under 10 degrees and it's New Year's Eve and it's the afternoon in Iowa City, what else do those people have to do? Well, they all showed up at Harvard Hawkeye. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, it was energetic. The fans were into it. And, you know, as Iowa crept back into the game and cut it to one with like 6 minutes to go, I'll tell you what, the crowd was in it and it was loud and it was getting louder and louder. And I think that was the most impressive thing for me was that, you know, hey, Indiana didn't play its best game. It didn't shoot particularly well, made a lot of turnovers, decision-making, you know, it was off in a couple of areas. But at the same time, it found a way to win, and that was a huge win. I don't care if it's an unranked Iowa team or not. Indiana needed to win games like that in order to, you know, be a legitimate Big Ten title contender. And I think that's what comes out of that first game is that, you know, you're showing people that I still don't know if it's a top 10 or a top 5 or where Indiana should be ranked. But I think what you're seeing is that Indiana is clearly a team that's going to contend for the Big Ten title.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Looking on TV, it just seemed like it was a much more hostile environment than what, you know, Matt and I have been to when we covered games at Iowa. It seemed like a lot better. You actually had a very, very deep line, which was in your blog today, which was about it was sold out, and quote, it didn't look like the scotch tape was fresh, okay? That hit me hard right there. That was a great line. My question to you is, I know you talked a lot about this you wrote a lot about this in the Indy Star today, but Jordan Holes, he didn't even make a basket yesterday, and it seems like he's always kind of struggled there. From the blog, as you said, he was 3 of 26 in his career on the road at Iowa. I guess, what's your overall take on how Jordan did yesterday?
You know, the only good thing with Jordan yesterday was that, I mean, yeah, he clearly wasn't in his element shooting. And I thought one of the interesting stats within the stat there was that he was 0 for 10 from the field, but only 4 of those were three-pointers. Usually with Jordan, you know, the 75 to 80% of his shot attempts are three-pointers. And so, you know, he was trying to drive the ball to the basket, trying to get, you know, that little pull-up shot or the little floater in the lane or whatever. I think he was trying to do anything he could to get, you know, positive points, and even that wasn't working. But the thing that worked well for him yesterday was that he had 6 assists and no turnovers. I mean, a lot of times I think you have situations where people struggle, but, you know, they struggle across the board. And, you know, even if they're not helping offensively, you know, they also struggle in other areas. I mean, the one thing we know about Jordan Holes' fan, and I think that, you know, you could have made a case early on this season that he was Indiana's most valuable player for about the first 7 or 8 games, just the way he's been shooting the ball and just how he has played as a senior. But let's be serious and honest here. You know, if he's not doing it offensively, he's not going to be doing it defensively either. I mean, that's not his strong area. And so, but yesterday, you know, I thought he did enough good things on defense. And again, the assist to turnover ratio is huge, and he kind of played through that. But when I went back last night and kind of dissected what you're talking about, 3 for 26 in 4 games at Iowa, 1 for 14. Or 13 from three-point range, a total of 11 points in 4 games over there. I mean, that's just crazy talk. I mean, it really is. And then now you look at his next road game is at Penn State next Monday, and his last trip to Bryce Jordan Center, he was 7 of 11 from the field, 7 of 9 from three-point range, scored his career high of 28 points. I mean, so in that one game, he scored 17 more points than he did in 4 trips to Carver Hawkeye. That's pretty crazy stuff.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, he's got to be excited about that road trip. Definitely one to forget in Iowa City. But, you know, as you mentioned, the 6 assists was strong. And, And, you know, also the fact that IU had a great game from Yogi Ferrell helped out. I think he might have had one of his strongest games for the Hoosiers yet with 9 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists. But also, you know, just the confidence he played with. He really, you know, kind of imposed his will on offense a little bit when IU was kind of stalling and, you know, kind of picked up the slack. What'd you think about him last night?
You know, I think Yogi's still a work in progress a little bit. I mean, he's clearly more of a refined game than a couple of other guys that are freshmen that are still kind of finding their way, clearly. But, you know, yeah, you mentioned 9 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. He had a big three-pointer with about 12 minutes to go from the left wing at a time when Iowa cut the lead to 3 at 49-46, and he knocks down that 3 to make it 52-46. He continues to do a lot of good things. What I loved about his game in the first half, especially, was it just looked like he could do whatever he wanted to, whenever he wanted to. I mean, he could, mm-hmm. he was taking people off the dribble, he was driving the lane, he was doing that little soft bank shot as he drove, and he does a little pull-up thing right before he gets to the basket. I think that's the kind of player that people have envisioned that he will ultimately be in Indiana, and somebody that, you know, will be able to sustain that kind of effort over the long haul in a lot of games. But at the same time, as good as all of that was, I mean, he had 2 big turnovers toward the end of the game. He had one where he tried to throw a little bounce pass inside to Cruzillo to get knocked away in a critical situation. He had that baseline out of bounds, kind of a lob toward half court that he tried to get Cody on the run, and that got taken away. And then he had that free throw with about 52 seconds to go in a 1-on-1 situation, missed that free throw that proved to be, you know, a critical miss too. So, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag. Yeah, he did a lot of good things, and yeah, when you look at his game and the things you know, that he brings to that team and gives them kind of a whole new dynamic at the point guard position, I mean, that's all a real positive. But you know, he clearly still has some areas in his game that he needs to work on too.
Right. Now, Iowa was a pretty horrendous 33% shooting. They only shot 17% from three. A lot of people on Twitter, and I know Dan Dockich brought it up a lot on the broadcast, was Crean wanting to go zone a lot of that game on defense. Now, I mean, Roy Devin Marble, who's their star player, came in. He only shot 1 of 14 from the field. I mean, so it limited him a little bit. But what's your take just on the overall idea about going zone for most of that game?
Well, you know, I wasn't really sure why he did it as much as he did. But, I mean, Indiana's played zone all year. I mean, it's not like this was a new thing. I mean, sure, they played more zone in that game than they have in other games. But, you know, you had people in foul trouble early, too. Jordan Holes picked up his second with about 9.5 minutes to go in the first half. Cody Zeller had his second at the 4:21 mark of the first half. Hunter Perea got 2 in the first half, although that turned out to be kind of a non-factor. But, you know, it was a case, I think, where they didn't think that Iowa could beat them from outside, and they felt like, you know, maybe they were getting a little bit too much of dribble penetration with a guy like Aaron White or Roy Devin Marble, even Adam Woodbury to an extent. And so, I think they felt like they could do more by trying to push Iowa to the outside. And, I mean, they don't have Matt Gatens anymore, which is a good thing for Indiana fans. But Zach McCabe certainly wasn't big for them down the stretch. I can think of at least 2 air balls, and he may have had a third on 3-pointers toward the end of the game.
Yeah, Hutch, you know, one thing I wanted to get your take on, which is something that stood out for me on the broadcast yesterday, was, you know, ESPN zoomed in on the Iowa huddles during halftime or during timeouts, And we got a little peek at the madman Fran McCaffrey can be when things aren't going well for the Hawkeyes. And, you know, I don't know if you could see from your press row seat, but he was just, you know, an inch away from these players' faces, screaming as loud as
crazy.
He can. Just, you know, yeah, just crazy, a madman. And, you know, obviously Indiana University is vaguely familiar with that type of coaching. But, you know, I just wanted to kind of get your take on whether that's, you know, effective and whether, you know, you saw the Hawkeyes respond to that last night or whether you, you know, thought they kind of, you know, crawled back in their shell after just getting ripped apart in the huddle.
You know, I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah, I did see McCaffrey and I did see what you're talking about. I probably didn't get as good an angle as you guys got on TV, but yeah, he's clearly in another dimension there, going crazy like that. And you're right. I mean, I covered the last 2 years with Coach Knight at IU and saw that similar kind of behavior. But no, it's funny. We talked to people at a restaurant last night and talked to a couple people at a hotel today, asked them what they thought of McCaffrey, and the people in Iowa City just love him. They think that he's the best thing that's happened to their program. You know, it's an interesting situation. Some players respond to that and some players don't. When Iowa came out and hit the first nine of the first 10 shots from the field in the second half, it seemed like whatever McCaffrey said at halftime had come through. That was one thing I thought was interesting too, is that IU came out and was warming up with about 5 minutes to go in the first half, and Iowa didn't get out till about, there was barely 2 minutes to go on the clock. He kept him in the locker room a long time, and there's a lot of speculation on Twitter from the Iowa writers about what was going on in there, that he was, you know, clearly having one of his meltdowns. And, you know, when you shoot 8 for 34 in the first half, I could see where he would do that. But you know, they came out sizzling. I think they were 9 of their first 10. And then, you know, we were sitting at dinner last night, and Justin Albers told me that he thinks that from that point on, I think Iowa went like 3 for 19 or 3 for 16 or something like that. And so they really kind of fell back into their old ways.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's that bad. He seems like a pretty nice guy for the most part. But that one, I'm just picturing one timeout yesterday when it was actually pretty cool. Like he didn't rip into one person in particular. He did a couple like spin moves and stuff, like, you know, balancing out the yelling. It was pretty cool to watch.
He had something for everybody. He had a message for every one of those players.
Yeah. There was not one guy in particular he was going after. He was like on one of those like spin things where he just went one to the other. I don't know. Okay, Hutch, here's my last question for you, and you kind of touched on it.
You know what? I mean, I wonder if, if that was Indiana basketball, you would think that someone would probably put that to music and it would be up on YouTube. But I don't know if they'll do that in Iowa with Fran or not, but it sounds like it could be choreographed.
Well, I'm hoping someone from Iowa is listening and they could do this. Hutch, my last question for you is, you kind of touched on it in the blog today about Hunter Perea. Now he wasn't playing, he was injured and then he was suspended, and then now he's back, but he only has 12 points in 5 games. You know, he does a pretty good job on the rebounding and kind of, you know, working down low. I guess what's your overall take on just Hunter's role on this team and kind of how quickly we need to see development out of him?
I'm going to answer something. I'm going to address something else first, and then I'll get to Hunter. So anyway,
okay.
Now I would not think a hangover cure on New Year's Day, Rosie, would be to be reading my blog that extensively. But I do appreciate that you read it all the way through.
Better. There's so. Nothing better.
So anyway, but no, I mean, Indiana's going to need to get more out of, not just Hunter Perea, more out of the bench. We were talking about that last night too, is that, you know, you wonder how deep that bench really is right now, because I don't think anybody played more than 8 or 9 minutes. You know, Hollowell had a real short cameo, and, you know, he had missed 3 games, and he had that great 10-foot air ball the left corner there. But he did have a couple of really big blocks too, so give him credit for that. But you know, Jerkin didn't play. Elston, another real cameo appearance there. You know, I'm not sure they got what they wanted out of Abel. Yeah, they got a great sixth man in Will Sheehy, but you know, they need more production in the front court, and that's clearly the case with Perea. And what I said in my blog today was that, you know, it's kind of funny looking back at it now because, you know, everybody was expending so much energy talking about, you know, how much this is hurting Indiana not having Jerkin and Perea in there those first nine games. And now, I mean, now that they've been back, I mean, you really haven't seen any difference at all. You wonder how long it's going to take for them to get up to game speed to where, you know, they look comfortable out there, because that was the thing with Perea yesterday. He just didn't look comfortable. He didn't look like he was in the flow. Just didn't you just didn't have a real confident feel. You know, the ball went down to him in the post one time, and he lost the ball inside, and you know, committed a couple of bad fouls. You know, he's a guy that that I think they could really use, especially, you know, I mean, just somebody has to step up in that role, whether it's Hollowell or Elston or Perea or Jerkin. I mean, they need two of those guys to really step up and give them some good front court minutes, or, you know, this is going to be a team that's not really all that deep as you move into the Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, I think we're seeing how much those nine-game suspensions really hurt Perea and Jerkin, because, you know, Kring really can't sneak Hahner the minutes that he wants to give him right now, because, you know, the teams are just too good to, you know, kind of just allow to play 4-on-5 for a while. So, yeah, they're going to have to grow up quickly to contribute to IU this year, and they'll definitely need him later in the Big Ten season. Hutch, you know, thanks so much for coming on the program and pulling over and talking to us for a bit. We really appreciate it. If you don't mind, you could pass the baton to Justin Albers. We'd love to talk to him a little bit about last night's game as well.
First, we have to plug.
Okay.
We first have to plug the greatest Indiana basketball book produced in 2012, Rising from the Ashes by Terry Hutchins.
Oh, The Return of Indiana. That's right.
So get that
book. You know, I appreciate that. Since there were only two books written about Indiana in 2012, I'll take that as a huge compliment that it was the best. Yeah, it's done real well. We sold over 10,000 copies last year already. So,
wow.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's been well received, and you know, I was telling somebody, you know, other books I've written, I always felt like, man, I got to sell these all by Christmas, or I'm going to lose my audience or lose my little window to sell it. But my guess is that as long as Indiana keeps playing well, this is a book that's going to sell for the next 3 or 4 months for sure, anyway. And I do appreciate that. You know, Dan Dawkins went a little further than you did right there, Rosie, and he said it was the greatest book ever written about Indiana basketball. To which I replied, I said, well, you know, I kind of like Season on the Brink myself, but but yeah, you know, I appreciate that as well. But anyway, here's Justin Albers. You guys have a great new year, and I'm sure we'll catch up with you before too long.
You too. Thanks, Hutch.
Thanks.
What's going on, guys?
Justin, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us as well today.
I'm well. Happy New Year, guys.
You just waking up?
I am not just waking up. I kind of dozed in and out on the trip, but I'm always awakened by great stories from Hutch here.
Well, hopefully you've been catching some of the show so far. Hopefully it didn't put you to sleep. Justin, you know, kind of wanted to start off. I know you heard what we talked about with Hutch a little bit, but I want to get your impression on Will Sheehy last night. Had another huge game off the bench, and so it looked like he responded pretty well to the Sheehy sucks chants. How loud were those exactly in Iowa's arena?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say they were considerably loud, and I don't think that's the last time we'll hear any derogatory chants toward Sheehy in the Big Ten this season, because as a lot of people have speculated throughout the non-conference season, he's just kind of becoming the most hated guy, probably not only on Indiana's team, but in the Big Ten, almost like a Chris Kramer from Purdue from a few years back, where people just don't like him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, probably the biggest fan of those chants was Sheehy. And we asked him about that afterward. Dustin Papurek of the Herald Times asked him, he said, "You just relish in that kind of stuff, don't you?" And he said, "Not necessarily, but I don't mind being the most hated guy on the team." So, I mean, he's kind of had a sly smile as he said he heard those chants. And as I mentioned, I don't think that's the last time we'll hear it, because, I mean, to be chanted against, to have derogatory chants directed at you, you have to be doing something right on the court. And we've seen that a lot from Sheehy this year. He continues to develop, continues to be a big weapon for Indiana off the bench. They don't have a lot of weapons off the bench right now, but that's it. Giving him that, or giving them that sixth man, a guy that can come in and play 25 to 30 minutes and score in double figures on a regular basis, has really helped them. So I think we'll continue to hear chants at Sheehy, and I think we'll continue to see the production we've seen from him so far, which has been big for them.
You know, I heard a lot of chants about me when I was playing basketball. Rosenstein sucks, but, you know, that actually is true. I think Matt was actually the person doing the
chanting. Yeah, by chance, you just mean me screaming. Yeah, that's kind of different.
Yeah.
You know, Sheehy embraces the role of the villain much better than you do.
Yeah, I mean, I actually do suck, unlike him, so I don't know. I embrace it, just like him, I embrace it. I don't mind being the team's most hated player. I feel like the player going in yesterday that everyone was watching for Iowa was Roy Devin Marble. He really kind of broke out last year, and he was a real focus for yesterday's game. He only finished 1 for 14 from the field. I guess a lot of that, he was guarded by Oladipo, who I thought was also great on the offensive end. I guess, what did you see, you know, defensively from Indiana, especially on Marble yesterday?
Well, like a lot of the guys that they played against, they, with that 2-3 zone, they kind of forced Marble to shoot from the outside, which, I mean, he can do. He's done that against Indiana in the past and against other teams. But he's not all that comfortable shooting from the outside to get in a rhythm. He'd rather get to the basket, get some floaters, get some layups to get his confidence going. And Indiana, with Oladipo on him, didn't really allow him to do that early. I mean, you'd say Holes and Marble kind of canceled each other out in a sense, because they both shot so poorly from the field. But Marble did get to the foul line 13 times and scored 12 points from the line, so finished with 14. A lot of those fouls may have been questionable, especially at the end on the three-pointer and the drive against Christian Watford. But, I mean, obviously Indiana did a great job, and obviously Oladipo did a great job on him, as he's done against the team's best player all year long. So Iowa had to kind of go to other people, and they didn't have Matt Gatens this year, which, as Hutch mentioned, was big for Indiana shooting threes and scoring 30 points at Carver-Hawkeye. But the defensive job that Sheehy and Oladipo did on Marble was what we've kind of come to expect from those guys.
Now, it's obviously early in the season, but at this point, would you say Oladipo is the MVP of this team, or is there somebody else that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has to be. Eamon Brennan did a good piece for ESPN.com yesterday saying just that he has been this team's MVP, and everybody looks at Cody Zeller, especially coming into the year, as being the National Player of the Year candidate and whatnot. But Oladipo, I mean, as Hutch mentioned, Holes maybe the first 7 or 8 games have been this team's MVP. But overall this season, I think you have to look at Oladipo as the best player and the most important player for this team, because he just gets those baskets, gets those rebounds, makes the plays at the key times. And he's been able to expand his game in many ways this year. He can defend better than he did in the past. Ball handling and shooting and improving, but what it kind of came down to yesterday was what he's kind of provided Indiana since he got here as a freshman, and that was the heart and hustle and grabbing the rebound that everybody wants and being able to score that late basket to kind of put the game away and give Indiana a big win. So I don't think there's any question Oladipo's been this team's MVP so far this season. I don't know if he'll continue to be that way, if Zeller will have a breakout Big Ten season, but so far it's definitely been Oladipo.
And Justin, what'd you think about Watford against Iowa? You know, I thought he had a pretty good game, you know, and his 11 points and 8 rebounds, I think, is kind of all IU needs from him this year. You know, I don't think he needs to score more than 11 to be a big help on offense. And those 8 rebounds are more important than anything, I think. You know, it was actually the third highest total yesterday, but that won't be the case too often. What'd you think about him?
Yeah, Watford was good. I mean, Indiana fans and people love to hate on Watford and say he shoots too much. He's kind of taken on a Verdell Jones III role this year for this team because people, for whatever reason, forget what he's done in the past and think he, I mean, he is a ball stopper and he does have some drawbacks. But if you look back at his career at Indiana and some of the big games where they've needed big performances, Christian Watford's always been there to give them that. Tournament last year against VCU, he had a huge game. Obviously, the Kentucky game at Assembly Hall last year, he outperformed Terrence Jones and hit the shot at the end. So when you need Christian Watford to have a big game, he's usually there, and he gave them what they needed yesterday as well. With, like you mentioned, 11-8, that might all be all they need from him this year because they have a lot of scoring weapons. Oladipo can do more. Holes didn't even score yesterday. So,
right.
But like you mentioned, I think Christian Watford, all he needs to do is play within himself, not shoot maybe 10, 11 times a game, but do what he did yesterday, hit the open outside shots, grab the rebounds, help the teams on the boards against bigger Big Ten teams. And I think he's done a good job this season, and I think he did a good job yesterday.
Right. No, I definitely agree with you. He just seemed a lot more aggressive overall. And I think this Iowa team has some potential. I mean, they got a lot of good players. I'm sure Marble will bounce back. And they you know, their freshman class, especially the point guard Gesell, if that's how you pronounce it, he was good yesterday. You could just see this team has a future. And the Big Ten overall is just as strong as ever, I think, personally. And, you know, there's 5 different teams that could potentially make the Final Four maybe this year if you look at it. This is kind of our Big Ten preview, I guess. So I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, not talking about Indiana specifically, but what's your take on the conference overall? Who do you like, and who maybe could be, I don't know, a surprise team?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you and say the conference is probably, I mean, as good as I've ever seen it. And I mean, there's some teams at the bottom that have no chance and are pretty awful and have lost some players that could really help them in Penn State and Nebraska and teams like that, but at the top, Minnesota has been really surprising this year. They beat Michigan State at home yesterday. That was a big win for them. They have a ton of talent on that team, so they're a team that could contend. Michigan State's always there. Michigan is ridiculously good this year, and they have players performing for them that probably nobody expected to be doing the things that they're doing right now.
Yeah.
And then Illinois. I mean, Illinois has been surprising as well, and they have a lot of the same pieces they've had in the past, but they have a new coach in John Gross that has really seemed to get the best out of them, and they're shooting the ball really well from the outside. So there's a lot of teams and a lot of games in this Big Ten schedule that's going to be tough for every team in the conference to go on the road and get wins. So which is why, and Hutch wants me to mention Ohio State. I think that's fairly obvious with Deshaun Thomas and Aaron Kraft back there. They lost a couple games in the non-conference against really good teams, but they'll be there as well. But I think that's what makes the Iowa win yesterday so big. You're going to have to be able to win games on the road, and probably 13, 14 wins gets the conference title done for you this year because it's so competitive.
Yeah, tons of good teams. And like you said, you know, that game against Minnesota in about a week and a half from now is going to be a real tough test for the Hoosiers. Penn State, maybe not so much. But, you know, who knows? Every Big Ten road game is tough, so you can't count them out. Justin, we know you and Hutch need to get back on the road, so we're going to let you go. But thanks so much for coming on the program, and a happy new year to you, and we'll have to have you back on soon.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Justin. And that's going to do it for this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Tune back next week. We'll be back on Inside the Hall, so look there. For Greg Rosenstein, I'm Matt Dollinger. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.